The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farm in the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. Distribution of the vaccine to fight COVID-19 is rolling out around the world. I visited with a veteran of the animal science industry who says we all might be surprised at how this vaccination effort is similar to the process she's encountered in her years of experience bringing animal pharmaceuticals to the market. Plus, she just happens to be a part of the testing phase of the COVID-19 vaccines. We explore an interesting and timely topic as we answer many of the questions all of us have about the process. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, and it's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. Performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. And for more information on Pivot BioProven, text PROVEN to 31313. Janice Keene spent much of her career working for animal health companies. She's not a scientist, yet she often found her job to be communicating what the science community does to bring vaccines and much more to market. Her role was often in the area of communications, where she was responsible for talking about topics like startup vaccine development, food safety, and animal health. Now she finds herself communicating about vaccines once again, in a role she couldn't have expected a year ago. Janice retired from her full-time working career, but when COVID-19 hit, she learned that companies in her hometown of Memphis were looking for volunteers for vaccine trials. She decided to participate. It's a journey that is still ongoing. Because of her background, she began to share what she was seeing in the development of a COVID-19 vaccine and comparing it to the processes she had spent years communicating to the public from the animal ag sector. I found her conversation very interesting as we discuss many of the questions and concerns we hear about the process today and its relationship to what many of us have experienced on the farm. Janice Keene is my guest, and Janice has quite a background in the animal health side of agriculture, but also a tie to current events right now with COVID vaccines going on. Janice, first of all, thanks for joining me, and maybe you want to give just a little bit of background about your agricultural background, if you will. I know that you started on a farm, I believe, in Maine. Is that right?
That's exactly right, Andrew. I milked cows and helped with all of the chores. My dad early on realized my skills laid more with working with the cows than working with the equipment. So that sort of formed my future. And I studied at Iowa State, Go Cyclones, with a dairy science degree, and then worked for a number of years for some breed associations in the dairy business. Went back to school at Ohio State, Go Bucks, and got a business degree there. And from that point forward, most of my career was focused in and around animal health, whether it was working for the companies themselves as they developed pharmaceuticals and vaccines to help animals. I also have worked on the agency side. And what was really fun about that experience, I had a chance to work with a lot of different companies, whether the traditional animal health companies. It was really fun to work with some innovative startup companies that were working in either vaccine development or food safety applications. And also, I also love the contact with associations. And one of my favorite roles was working at World Pork Expo for a number of years in the media room for the National Pork Producers Council.
So you've been around then this topic of animal health for quite a while. Now, I realize that you aren't a scientist, but yet your experience with a lot of vaccines and companies bringing those to market, that's something that you probably were around a lot and helped tell that story quite a bit in your roles with those different companies, correct?
Exactly. And I was blessed to work with so many great scientists and veterinarians who really helped explain the process to me and also really instilled in me a great trust in good science and how important that was to the basis of all of the animal health products. So working with the companies, they, of course, as they were getting ready to develop a new antibiotic or vaccine or feed ingredient, would go through some very stringent processes to make sure that everything was ready for the government organizations to review and confirm that everything was safe and effective before they ever brought something to market.
So we're going to kind of tie back to that experience here in a moment. Let me, for those listening to us, I'm going to fast forward to today or recent history here and talk about what you have gone through recently with COVID vaccine testing. You have retired, but you had an opportunity to be a part of those trials, I would say, what, 2 or 3 months ago, or how far back are we talking?
That's exactly right. My actual interest in participating in a trial started way earlier in the year, not long after public health officials and scientists had identified that COVID-19, what it was and how serious it was and how easy it was to share amongst ourselves, I guess you would say. So knowing how dangerous it would be, I knew that having a vaccine available as quickly as possible would be very, very important to all of us. And because of my years working in the animal health industry, I already had a really high level of trust for what happens before a product can be brought to market. So what I did from the get-go is I actually live here in Memphis, Tennessee right now, and we're blessed to have two different companies on a regular basis who are what they call trial investigators, and they're contracted by various companies as they're developing vaccines or pharmaceutical products to actually go through and execute what they call phase three trials in humans. And so I applied online for both of those two companies, but I had also been watching the news coverage and saw that there were a couple of national websites you could sign up on to become part of a trial. So I signed up everywhere I could, hoping against hope that I would be able to be part of a trial. And I got the first phone call about that back in August.
So when you did this, of course, you had the animal science background, but also you thought, I think that you had maybe some pre-existing conditions. It was something that you were interested in anyway, just because of the health aspect of it, correct?
Very much so. And I just had a feeling and a strong belief that my life would get back to normal much faster if I had access to the vaccine. So part of it was definitely selfish in nature because my family is primarily in Maine and Wisconsin, and I sure do want to see them and friends here in Memphis again sooner rather than later. But I also realized that some people may have been apprehensive about being part of a trial and thought it was just a really important way that I could contribute at this stage of my life and career.
So talk about then what happened. What's the trial process like? Because it's still an ongoing process for you.
Very much so, yes. So the first phone call I got from this local trial investigator was probably about a 30 to 45 minute phone call, and we talked through my health history and medications, things of that nature. And at the end of the conversation, the doctor who was managing the trial here in Memphis said that I did indeed meet the trial parameters. So we set up a visit, and my first in-person visit was on August 31st. And that process took about 3.5 hours. And just to give you a sense of how stringent the process is, when I arrived, there were a handful of other people there. We were socially distancing. And there were a couple of people who were frontline healthcare workers in hospitals. Another woman, her daughter, coincidentally, and by the way, I'm in the Pfizer-BioNTech trial. Her daughter happens to work in the research area for Pfizer. And she said, I called my daughter to make sure that it was an okay thing to be part of the trial. And she said, yes, it's a great opportunity. So we all watched a video from Pfizer that explained very thoroughly what the trial was going to involve, the potential side effects, things of that nature. Then from that point forward, it was individual contact. I met with a nurse to once again go over my health history. They did a physical exam. They did a blood draw to be able to create a baseline understanding of antibodies. They did a COVID test to make sure I hadn't had been exposed to COVID yet. And then they administered an injection. And the only person who knows, actually still to this point, whether I received the vaccine or the placebo is the nurse who actually administered the injection. It's what they call a double-blind study where the participant doesn't know and the trial investigators don't know exactly what you get. And then I downloaded a mobile app that they gave me because on a weekly basis ever since then, I complete an online diary identifying whether or not I've had any COVID symptoms. They also gave me a kit that had an at-home COVID test and a thermometer to check my temperature and all kinds of instructions about what to do if I did think I'd been exposed to COVID. And then I waited 30 minutes just to make sure I had no post-injection issues and went home. Now, at first, I really was convinced I got the placebo, and I was a little bit sad because there was never any injection site reaction, no redness. But about 6 hours later, I changed my mind and thought maybe I got the vaccine because my arms started becoming quite sore. The next day, I really didn't feel very great. I had some aches and pains. But on day two, that all started going away. It actually reminded me of when I'd gotten a pneumonia vaccine in the past. So then when I went back 3 weeks later for the second in-person visit, I was talking with the nurse, and that visit in total was about an hour and a half, but I explained my symptoms to her, and she said, "Well, I don't know for sure that you got the vaccine. Just know that the placebo is saline, and it would be very unlikely for a saline injection to create those kinds of after effects," I guess you would say. So she kind of wink, wink, nod, nod. I think you got the vaccine too. And so on that second visit, they did a COVID test. They administered the second injection. I waited 30 minutes to make sure everything was copacetic and went on. And then a month later, I went back, and this was a much shorter visit because we went through my post-injection experience, and they drew blood, and that's when they started being able to identify what my antibody levels would be against COVID-19. And as you mentioned, Andrew, this is going to be an ongoing process because I'm scheduled for my next blood draw in March of 2021, then September, and then a following year later. So they'll be tracking me for at least 2 years through this process.
And even though you don't know for sure whether you had the vaccine, I believe that pretty soon you will know, because since the rollout is this correct now of this to, I guess, nationwide, even worldwide, Pfizer is going to let folks know that got the placebo so that they can actually go and get the vaccine. Is that how this will work?
That's my understanding. A couple of weeks ago, I got a letter from Pfizer saying that it was finalizing a protocol to allow anyone in its trials. And there are about 44,000 of us, I believe, around the world who received a placebo to be able to go in and actually get the vaccine injection. And then they're going to continue to collect data on those folks throughout this entire process. So I'm guessing in the next week or so, I'll likely hear for sure whether or not I got the vaccine. And regardless, I'll be continuing to provide them with data on a weekly basis just so that they can continue to track us.
But other than those side effects that you had relatively soon after you had the vaccination, really nothing since then.
That's exactly right. And fingers crossed, I haven't been exposed to COVID. I will say that I'm a religious mask wearer, and I'm very careful to go out only when I need to. But I also recognize that, as you think about it, it's only been a year since we became aware of COVID-19, and it was just in January when the genome sequence was completed. And there's so much that we're still learning about the vaccine itself. So some questions I'm sure they're going to be continuing to try to answer through these trials and other trials is, once you're vaccinated, can you inadvertently still carry the virus and potentially shed it to others? So there's still a lot more that scientists are trying to learn about the vaccines and the virus so that we can provide protection to everyone.
As you mentioned earlier, you've been a part of the process of bringing vaccines to market, really, for a good chunk of your life. So I'm interested, how did this process
of a COVID vaccine compared to what you saw during a lot of your career with animal vaccines being brought to the market?
You bet. You know, there are so many similarities. I think the biggest difference was that when you're doing vaccine trials in cattle or pigs, they can't talk back and give you feedback. But, of course, in human trials, we as subjects can do that. But so much of it is the same. So, for example, and I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, like, what process did we all go through to get a vaccine so quickly? So whether it's an animal vaccine or a human vaccine, basically the company, once they identify that, hey, we want to try to control this virus, they're going to do what they call basic research. And they're going to come up with a small group of vaccine candidates that have an antigen, and that's what they put in a vaccine to create the immune reaction. And they're going to pick what they think are going to be the best vaccine candidates. So then they go into a multi-phase process, and phases one and two are when you're actually testing these candidates. And first they want to evaluate the safety to make sure it's going to be safe for the animal or the person that actually receives the vaccine. And then they're going to be trying to determine which dose level of the best candidates are really going to be the best or create the best outcomes for the future. So then they move into phase three, and that's the part of the trial that I have been part of with the Pfizer vaccine. And at that point in time, they're testing their best candidate, but they're doing it in a much larger population of people or animals. And they're trying to answer the question, so exactly how effective is the vaccine at this particular dose? And then they're going to continue to evaluate it for safety because they want to watch and make sure that there aren't any potential adverse reactions that they didn't see in that smaller population that they had tested before. And then you get to the point where we're at right now with the Pfizer vaccine, and I think Moderna is coming right behind it, and that is the regulatory review and licensing. So with animals, the USDA actually does that, and in humans, it's the FDA. So they're going to be looking at all of the data about the vaccine itself, and companies have to present to the FDA their own analysis of the data, but the FDA takes it a step further. They review that information, but they also dig into the data themselves and do their own analysis to just confirm and make sure, yes, this really is as represented. But they also at this time are reviewing the manufacturing facilities, the processes, and just wanting to make sure everything about how that vaccine is packaged and ready to go into the arm of someone, that it's ready to go and okay. But then a forever part of the process is what they call post-approval monitoring. So FDA on an ongoing basis will always monitor the manufacturing processes, the facilities. They'll test vaccines to make sure that they're potent, they're safe and pure as they need to be. And then if there's ever an adverse event, and this happens with animals as well as people, and something unexplained, some health condition or health issue that crops up, that has to be reported to the FDA, and then they investigate it to see, you know, was this caused by the vaccine potentially, or was it just something else that happened to occur? And in this case, because it is an emergency use authorization and not a complete approval, they're going to continue these phase three trials to collect all of this data and start to try to answer the question, so how long does the immunity last once you're vaccinated too? So the steps are really the same, but, and I will say, having gone through the process as a patient, I guess you would say, my level of confidence in our U.S. government regulatory authorities is even higher than it was before. I trust the process implicitly.
I'm sure you hear, of course, all the different banter about, well, we should be concerned, and rightfully so. We want things to go through testing. And as you mentioned, this has gone through the process pretty quickly compared to what we would normally do, and testing still ongoing. What gives you the confidence in the vaccine because it has gone through the process so quickly? You've been around animal vaccines that would take much longer, but I know that you have confidence. So why the confidence for us now having a vaccine that did go through the process relatively quickly compared to others?
But that's such an important question. And I tell you, it took huge commitment from governments, from universities, and companies individually to actually make this happen. Because normally all of these steps that we just talked about take place sequentially, and they take place over a period of years. So you wouldn't really start manufacturing or you know, the manufacturing process and scaling it up until you'd totally completed multi-year studies to answer questions like, well, how long will this vaccine last? So, you know, companies and governments basically said, we're going to trust what we see early on with these vaccines, and we're going to deploy money and resources to actually start manufacturing in large quantities these vaccines, hoping and praying that they turn out to be safe and effective. And then usually the government organizations will review new potential products in a sequential fashion whenever they come in and are next in the queue, basically. But in this case, the government authorities said, hey, this is really critically important for public health, so we're going to shift all of our resources to looking at the data quickly, and we're going to, I'm sure there are a lot of sleepless nights at the FDA going through data just to make sure everything was certain. And then something else that has been a real blessing in recent years, because universities and companies just on an ongoing basis are always researching new things. And for, I think, more than 10 years, public health authorities around the world had identified coronavirus as probably the next big potential pandemic creator. So there's been just ongoing research, a lot of it government funded, to just investigate coronavirus in general. So that gave us a leg up. And then in recent years, companies have actually been developing what they call vaccine platforms. So it's basically, I guess you'd call it a conduit saying, you know, if we're going to create a vaccine for Ebola, we're going to take this platform and we're going to put the Ebola in it, antigen, and we'll create that. But this also could work if we have coronavirus. And so by having those platforms already prepared and approved by the federal government, it's a much quicker turn than if you're starting totally from scratch with all of that. So understanding that they weren't, the government or the U.S. government anyway, was not sacrificing any steps. They were just expediting it and doing things not sequentially, but at the same time, it's truly a miracle that this has come together, but it's a blessing.
Do you think that this changes the way that we develop vaccines in the future? If we do this and pull it off well, which it looks like it's going well, do we say, oh, we should be moving these things through faster because they will help people or animals more quickly? Or was the system all right that we had that took more time to do it? And this is just happens to be an anomaly because we had lots of people that this could affect in a bad way. And so we did need to just rush this one time.
Boy, that's a great question. I think in our perfect world, we would love to do this, but I think the reality is that the amount of resources that you would have to put against that and the cost associated with it means that that's not a realistic possibility for everyday, I guess you would say, medications. And I probably shouldn't use that adjective, everyday medications, because the other thing that I always try to remind myself is it's so easy to take for granted the medical tools we have available for animals and humans. Because I remember when I was younger, I read a book by James Herriot. Probably many of your listeners have read All Creatures Great and Small. And back at the turn of the century, well, the early 1900s anyway, you know, it was not uncommon for a young calf to be put out on pasture and die from having worms. And think about today, that would never happen today. We have so many tools that are safe and effective to manage worms and parasites in animals. And then when I was a young girl growing up, polio was a really big deal. And I remember going with my parents to the drugstore on a Sunday after church, and we got a sugar cube with the salt vaccine in it. And today, how many people do any of us know who have polio? So, you know, there are just so many instances of there are horrible diseases out there, so many of them that we've actually brought under control. But, you know, we need to continue to trust science and be responsible with our science, but trust science, good science, and making sure that we're finding new and exciting and innovative ways to try to bring those solutions to market in a cost-effective way, but as quickly as we possibly can, too.
I know that, of course, you're a big believer in the vaccines and then the power of those vaccines. What do you say to folks out there that say, you know, I'm fairly young, I don't have underlying conditions, corona, COVID doesn't affect young people, it doesn't look like, so I'm really not going to even worry about the vaccine. Is that really the right way I should look at this? And we only give it to those that would be vulnerable, or should everybody be thinking about, you know, when this comes available for my age group or however we're going to distribute this, I should go get this?
Boy, I just hope with all of my heart that all of your listeners get the vaccine themselves. You too may have seen some of the reporting that has come out in the last week that the latest outbreaks are now happening in college towns around the country. And while younger people may not have the symptoms and become sick with them, apparently they're very effective carriers. They're asymptomatic carriers and shed the virus to others who may be more vulnerable. So as you think about it, you know, farmers take such great care of all of the livestock in their care. And they vaccinate their cattle and their pigs and sheep and, you know, for these devastating diseases. And by vaccinating the entire herd, they create what, you know, we've come to know as herd immunity. And that is by far the best way to actually manage these diseases. And why take a risk of getting sick and dying or having a debilitating condition for the rest of your life if we can have this very cost-effective, proven safe and effective solution? So with all of my heart, I encourage everyone to, you know, consult your doctor just to make sure you don't have any underlying conditions that might cause a potential concern if you were to receive the vaccine, but then get vaccinated as soon as a vaccine is available to them.
You made the mention there of herd immunity, and maybe we should stop for a moment because I think people get that term confused with things. You mentioned that we get herd immunity because farmers vaccinate the entire herd. I think some folks look at this and say, well, if nobody gets the vaccine and lets it run its course, then we will all have herd immunity. I guess you can get it two different ways, but I'm betting your experience would be the first way is the preferred way to get the herd immunity through the vaccination.
That's right. You know, we are blessed to live in a country where we all have choices about many, many things, and people can choose to not get vaccinated, but the only way to achieve herd immunity by not getting vaccinated and exposing everyone to the virus is to accept horrendously large death counts and disability counts from the virus. You know, for instance, last week alone, there were almost 16,000 deaths just in the United States alone from COVID. And that averages out to about one every 38 seconds. So in the time that you and I have been talking, if the same rate is occurring this week, then about 32 people will have died in just the time we've been speaking. So I know people don't want their loved ones to be in that position. And the best way to protect the people you love is to get the vaccination yourself. And if I could just do a quick shout out to everybody who is a frontline worker and who's listening to your program today during the pandemic, and that's everyone from medical workers to farmers and packing plant employees, grocery workers, all of the people in trucking and logistics. Just thank you for what you're doing to help keep us all fed and keep us safe. And if we all do our part, the light really is at the end of the tunnel for managing COVID-19.
Janice, thank you again for your time. I've really learned a lot. It's been a good discussion.
Great. Thanks so much.
I thought Janice's experiences were very timely given the rollout of the vaccination programs we're seeing here and abroad. Hopefully we covered some of the questions that all of us have about this process, and I really liked the way she could relate her experiences back to her career in the animal health industry. Thanks for listening. I wish you a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. We'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.